Man Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on the 133, ready to take off.
Albert Delta, 3321, Mike, enemy downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 45 of the In the Pattern Podcast. We have a great show in store for you guys tonight. We have the whole crew here finally. All four of us. Brad, John, Mark, and I am Chris. And we're glad that you joined us in the virtual hangar for this evening's podcast. We are getting stoked for Oshkosh. You guys pumped as much as I am?
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
Wait, who was that?
Yeah.
Huh? What?
Yeah.
The mysterious Mark is back again.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Chris.
No. Oh, man. So, yeah, the whole crew, and we're all going to be at Oshkosh. It is going to be so cool. We're actually all going to, you know, us will actually get to see Mark face-to-face for the first time, as well as the rest of Camp Bacon.
Same place, same time. I don't believe it. Most people don't think you actually exist, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Including us, so, you know.
I'm pretty sure he's an AI.
Well, you
I
know
can't find him on the registry on the FAA.
Exactly. I'm just a ghost. I really am. I'm an internet presence.
It was
peer pressure, I have to admit. All the av geeks out there were pressuring me. You've got to come. I'm like, fine.
It worked.
Make it happen. It worked.
Woo-hoo!
So.
Very good. Let's see. How long we've been doing this podcast? Is it 3 years?
It's more than that. We started in 2010. We're coming up on 4.
Oh my goodness!
Wow.
Yeah, it was October 2010.
Yep. Okay. So we're coming up on October 2010.
So 3 years.
Almost 4 though. Pretty close.
Yeah. We're almost on 4, and you know, we're sneaking up on our 50th episode here soon. So we only got 5 more after this.
Well, I said, you know, I'm not going to be able to make it, I've been, you know, all these other family vacations and whatnot, and then Mark said, okay, I'm in, and that same day I was like, all right, then fine, I'm coming.
Wait, so you guys are all coming to Oshkosh? Are you kidding?
I'm using the human mailing tube.
And funny enough, I'm going to do the same thing, except there's this guy that I know that kind of lives close to Minneapolis, St. Paul, who offered to give me a ride in an Arrow, and I think that's Brad.
Very
Woo-hoo!
Nice.
Your first sight of Oshkosh is going to be from the approach.
How awesome is that?
And his last sight ever.
When Brad and I talked about this, and I'm like, you know what? For being the very first time going. You know, it coming in, you got to do the Fisk. And I was like, oh, okay, I can't say no anymore. I mean, it was literally a lot of people going, you got to go. I have even got friends here that are like, you've never been to Osh? Are you sick? Are you crazy? What's the problem? So, and then when Brad and I were talking, we tried to do this last year too, and it just didn't work out. But
now watch, it'll be IFR. We'll end up shooting like a 200-foot ILS.
Better not be. That's the middle of the week.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, I've we'll talk about this later, but I've actually been doing some of that practice stuff too, so it's a little bit of IFR work. So
nice.
I'll be a set of hands there or eyes for you. How's that?
I would appreciate it.
So
I can imagine a you know, second, third, fifth, tenth pair of eyes on that approach would be welcome.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, free cookies and or beer to whoever spots an airplane before I do.
I was hoping to get in before you guys so I could document the landing, but you're going to beat me there by about 3 hours. So.
Any of you have GoPros?
Mark does.
I do, and I'm actually going to get a
please. We need to talk.
Can you get the audio too?
I have to look at my cable, but I do have a splitter.
Okay. Worst case scenario, just do what I do. Use a He's a cheap digital voice recorder and a little mic that goes inside your ear cup.
Oh, that's a good idea, too.
Whatever works.
I'm going to bring my digital recorder for walking around talking to people, too. So
nice.
We have stuff to do to add to the daily feeds or whatever we're going to do.
Yeah, because we could really use a approach, and your approach would be, like, the best thing ever.
Cool. Well,
and more pressure
Brad's
on Brad.
Brad's approach. But...
No, that's what I mean. Like, your guys.
Yeah, I was doing the weight and balance, and I think you're going to be in the back, Mark.
No, actually, if we're in the arrow, are you sure?
Yes. Okay. I'll send you the spreadsheet, but I couldn't. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk about it offline. I'm working on it. I think everybody in the Twitterverse has seen it.
If you and I stop eating today. We could probably both sit in the front seat.
Yeah, we're only going with half fuel, right?
Or we're going with 48. So, or actually 50. But it depends on where I pick you up. If I pick you up at MSP, then we'll be at like 46 or something, 45.
Okay.
But I'm not buying gas at MSP for $10 a gallon. It's going to be... That'd be hard enough just paying the fee.
Let's see. Well, let's get going here. Since the last episode, unfortunately, I haven't been doing any flying. John, I don't think you've been doing any flying. Brad,
hey
Mark,
now,
you
hey
guys.
Now.
What?
Did you skip over me?
Oh, yeah. What? You did?
Yeah, he was talking about
it. I'm sorry, I just got used to saying that. My bad.
I it's in the script.
John actually flies?
Dust
yeah,
off that.
Like you to exist.
Yeah. Well, shoot, we got flying to talk about here.
Yeah, we do. I got some. Other people have some.
Who volunteers to go first?
John could go.
Not everybody speaks every once.
All right.
All right, John.
So, end of June. I think it was right after it was right after we recorded. Actually, like 28th or something, 29th, I took my aunt up for her first flight, and she was super excited about it, and it turned out to be a fantastic day. It was nice and calm, you know, for a summer day, not bumpy at all, which is kind of surprising around here, and we just took off, kind of went for hour and a half, putzed around just kind of north of Baltimore. Went to Carroll County, did a couple touch and goes, which ended up being a little high. The way it's on a hill, there's some trees just before it that kind of messed with your sight picture, and it was getting me all kind of wonky, but it wasn't too bad. But overall, it was actually a pretty nice flight, and she absolutely loved it. She took me up on the offer to fly for a little bit, which not too many people have, so that was nice. And overall, just a really nice flight. Got my three landings, got an hour and a half in. I'm up to 85 hours, so I'm chugging along.
Nice. It's great to get back up in the air again, for sure. What was the weather pretty good for that day?
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It was pretty clear.
You guys get much humidity?
That's funny.
Between the swamp that is Washington, D.C. and the Atlantic Ocean?
Yeah. just a little.
Just a tad. Just made me think of that because we're, like, started our monsoon season already early here. And, it's miserable from the minute you get up till you go to sleep almost, so made me think about that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, 50 degrees cooler than where you are, but just as miserable because it's just like, you know,
mm-hmm.
just wet everywhere. It was, you know, surprisingly for a summer day, though, like I said, there wasn't a whole lot of convection going on that morning, so it was actually pretty nice. It wasn't too bumpy, so
nice.
I was surprised. It was pretty good. So that was That was the last flight, and I'm looking right now, day after I get back from Oshkosh, flying up to Scranton. Be my longest flight yet, and looks like me and Damon are a go for that. So I'm going to be booking the airplane right now, actually, because one of the other planes is already booked for that time. Mm. So we'll go up in 789 Echo Papa.
Sounds like a fine plan.
So yeah, booking that now, actually. it's about an hour and a half flight, so it's going to be definitely my longest yet. I was planning in a little bit, and it's in a Tursa.
Oh, yeah.
Never.
So, Chris, you were... just have to be on the radio. So, Chris, you were asking about the humidity thing. Mm-hmm. The dew point where you are is 54, but the temperature is like 104. Mm-hmm. The dew point where I am is 51, but the temperature is like 70. The dew point where John is 68, and the temperature is 69. Oh,
that means you're going to have rain.
It just poured.
Did it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got some nice storms rolling through right now. It's actually been lighting up my window.
Well, so. I was just in Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri, for the 4th of July weekend, and my whole family is like, oh, it's going to suck. It's so humid and hot and nasty during the summer, but we couldn't have had nicer weather. I mean, it was a little humid, yeah, and we were on the lake, but it was only like, you know, in the mid to low 80s. And while that same time, while that's happening back here at home, they're getting hammered with 100 degrees plus, and now we got the, you know, great big, thunderstorms coming in from the monsoons and stuff. So it was pouring rain, and now after that, you know, now it's just humid every single day. So, yuck.
Dew point of 51 is not humid, especially when the temperature is 104.
Oh, it doesn't help. I don't know what it... I mean, as soon as you walk outside, you start just melting.
Well, that's just because it's hot.
Well, dry heat's different, I believe. Turn your oven on and get inside for a minute. It's just like that.
It's, and actually, Brad, now it's, what I just looked at for my house right now, it's a dew point 70, temperature 70.
There you go.
That equals wetness.
Yes.
Change out your, Fruit of the Looms for Depends.
That's wrong. Anyway, moving on.
Moving right along.
There's no segue for that whatsoever. All right, Mark, tell us what's been going on there in NorCal.
Yeah, well, since I haven't been on forever, we were trying to recall before we actually started recording what's the last thing I talked about. I think some of our listeners were aware that I used to work in the East Bay, actually the city of Walnut Creek. And from my house here in Roseville to Walnut Creek is 102 miles each way. So I was driving that 3 days a week, and my good friend who owns the flight school that I got my certificates in had just returned from a 3-year recall stint with the U.S. Air Force. So he was back, and very first thing you do when you get back out of the Air Force, besides running a flight school because that just sucks all your money out of you, is to go look for a job. Well, Dennis was fortunate enough to get a job with the FISDO in San Jose, which is another – it's an hour-plus flight. So what he does 5 days a week is he'll take the Aero, and he flies up from Auburn to San Jose. And we had talked about just, you know, ride sharing to make it easier. And I started doing the math with the, you know, how much it would cost me out of my pocket each way. And it just, you know, it didn't make financial sense compared to the mileage that I'm getting in my car. And so I never really did it. And then there was an opportunity coming up that would require me to have a complex rating, which means I needed to get checked out in the Aero to be able to do this other event with the California Capital Air Show. So I was like, So I call up Dennis. I'm like, hey, is there any way, since we're doing this, you know, we talked about flying back and forth anyway, is there any way that we can train me and get me up to speed on the aero and get my complex? And he's like, absolutely. So we made arrangements, and he flew down to Lincoln, and you know, that's the Kilo Lima Hotel, Mike, for those in the area. And he picked me up in the morning and taxied in, and I took the left seat. He took the right seat. And it's what's funny is he actually taxied up in the right seat. He's mm-hmm. been an instructor for so long that that's his comfort in a GA airplane is to fly from the right seat. So I asked him, I'm like, don't you know how to fly from the left seat? He's like, I can if I have to, but I'm more comfortable over here. You know, being a fighter jock, it's throttle in the left hand, stick in the right. And he goes, it's just natural for me. So so what we did was in the mornings, it was basically I did everything. I did the run-ups. I did the takeoff, the whole procedure. We briefed everything before, you know, what's different between the Archer and the Aero and complex prop, the, you know, what manifold pressure is all about and, you know, the landing gear and making sure. And then, you know, the emergency systems with having retractable gear. And he kind of gave me some homework ahead of time. I got the POH and I read through it and understand that this is an Aero 1. And I'm not sure if Brad, the Aero that you have, I think is a 2, isn't it?
It's a 3.
Okay. The Aero that I was flying is a 69. And, you know, in the POH, it talks about the landing gear that manages itself. Basically, it, you know, you get too slow, it automatically drops it and, you know, things like that. But so it was all the you know, I got myself up to speed, but then to put it into practical use was pretty cool. So I was familiar with the layout of the plane. So I did the whole thing and took off, contacted NorCal. We get flight following early in the morning just because that's when everybody else is waking up in the area. Sacramento International, a bunch of flights start coming out of there. Travis starts waking up. Travis Air Force Base starts waking up, and we have to fly right through their airspace to get to the East Bay. And that, you know, as you're coming into the Bay Area, that's when all of the Class Bravo starts waking up. So we wanted to make sure that we were, you know, had that other set of eyes with NorCal on us. So I made all those calls and got us into Concord, Buchanan Field there. And we did that, for 3 days. You know, he dropped me off, he took off, went, he had to be into SFO before a certain time. I want to say probably before like 7:30 in the morning or something like that. And then he'd come pick me up and same thing. I'd fly back. And as we were coming back, we were going through all the different emergency procedures. You know, we did slow flight, we did stalls, and it's just like the Archer, and it you stall it just goes okay, it just mushes over, and you know, it was real easy to do. And showed me the performance that it can do, the, you know, just like you're going through primary, how well it glides, you know, find your best speed and your best, you know, best glide and do all the procedures. And so we just went through all of that, and you know, he told me after the third day of doing it, we racked up probably I want to say it was every bit of 10 hours by the time all was said and done with all the flying back and forth and doing other work, that he goes, yeah, after about the first day, I was ready to sign you off, but we just needed to build a couple more hours just to be legal and safe. So
nice.
Yeah. I was, to be honest, transitioning from the Archer into the Aero. It's all about, you know, understanding the manifold pressure, you know, how to work the prop and the power and making sure you got three green when you're in the pattern. So you just get, you know, you really use the gumps. And, you know, I know, Ron Klutz listens to this, and that's one of the things that he harps on a lot as a CFI is say the gumps. And when you make your turn from, downwind to base, three green. Making your turn to final, three green, and verifying that every single time. So,
and the props forward.
And the prop, exactly. Yep. You see, basically, that's the one thing that I now do. Not only do I do a gumps on the 45 and to prepare myself, but I do the gumps in the downwind. I run it through my head real quick again on the on base and again on final just to make sure. And So I've actually been flying I fly the Arrow a lot more than I fly the Archer. The cost right now, just between the two, is only something like $8 or $10 an hour difference. So the difference in performance and speed and it outweighs that $10 an hour. I got the Complex endorsement. And then it was the very following weekend. Again, I think most of our listeners know that I'm one of the team leaders for the California Capital Air Show. I run the ramp security for all the static aircraft out there. So I have a crew that we keep an eye and make sure, you know, people aren't climbing into intakes and up into wheel wells and, you know, touching things that they're not supposed to. So, as part of the group with the California Capital Air Show, we do a lot of other outreach programs. And one of the programs that we did this last time was with at-risk kids and teenagers. There was probably 100 kids that were there. We had this really good inspirational speaker, and I should have got his name before we got on the podcast, but I didn't. Really, really good guy. We had probably the entire fleet from the flight school. We had FedEx brought in one of their planes. We had two T-6s, a T-28. A guy that actually converted a Velocity into a turbine. He's here, so he brought that in too. So the kids could see, you know, all the different things that you could do in aviation. And basically, the goal was these kids had to write an essay, and the top 10 kids were selected. The whole program is to really show them, you know, you may be at risk, but just know that where you're at in the situation that you're in right now, that there's other things in life and aviation and math, science, the whole program is available to you. You know, it's really at the point now that all you need to do is ask.
Don't let your situation define you.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. So the group that was the Citrus Heights. I want to say it's the Citrus Heights Police Activities League. The kids that they got to go, you know, number one, they got to listen to this inspirational speaker, and his story alone was amazing. And I'll try and grab his name, and then we'll throw it up on the show notes. He's got a couple of books out, but he basically came from a very impoverished family to working his way through not only graduating high school, but being able to go to college and getting his master's, I think it was at Oxford, and it just so on and so forth. And he's got a PhD and amazing African-American gentleman. And he's just so full of fire. It was really cool to see. And the kids were all fired up and excited. And the backdrop, we're in this very large hangar, and the kids are all in round tables, and they, you know, did a big barbecue for him. And the backdrop behind the speaker was, if I can do this, it was a Citation, two TBMs. I think there was a Cirrus in there. It was just all these, and they were all white. It was just beautiful. And these kids are like, I can grow up and I can fly those. And they're like, absolutely. All you got to do is ask. And there's ways to find you that you can become the pilot to fly that airplane. And then behind them were a lot of the vintage stuff, the T-6s and the T-28s and so on and so forth. And so basically what it all wrapped up to be is that the kids who wrote the essays that won, they all got to go on a flight. So I had the Arrow, and I was fortunate enough to be able to take one of the kids up, and there was just this huge group with each of these kids. And they took pictures, and, you know, we signed a certificate for them, but we basically took them out and showed them everything in the plane. And we were at Mather Air Force Base, or former Air Force Base. We went from there, took them around Folsom Lake. We all agreed, we all had a pilot's briefing before, that we were running a clockwise racetrack pattern around the perimeter of the rake. You know, we had 10 aircraft up at the same time. You know, we were just launching one after another. And we all agreed to stay up about 1,000 feet. But it was bumpy. It was a warm day. But all the kids had a great time. The young man that was with me, you know, I said, okay, you ready? You wanna try and fly? And at first he was like, I don't know. I'm kind of, you know, afraid. And he's just really looking out and just taking everything in. And I'm like, how's this? I'll keep my hand here and you go ahead and put your hands there. And if at any point in time you don't feel comfortable, I'll go ahead and take the plane. Okay. And it was kind of like, you know, that, you know, when you're teaching your kid how to ride a bike, you know, they're pedaling, you've already let go, you know, kind of thing. So he was flying, and I had my, you know, obviously had my hand right there ready to go. And, but I let go, and he was just so focused on outside and flying, and, you know, and he did a great job. And he didn't realize that he probably flew, halfway around the lake by himself and just had a blast. And so we came back around and landed and took a bunch of pictures with him and stuff. And it was really, really a cool thing. But, you know, that right there sums up exactly why I fly. You know, it's just, I love to fly and I love the view and I love the vantage point of being up there, but it's being able to give back, you know? So that was a really cool day for me. After that, I took a couple of flights. I've been up to Placerville, and did a couple of things up there. It's the, Chris, you could appreciate the way that Placerville's runway is. It's up on a plateau, so it's almost like Sedona for you.
Nice.
But it's trippy because the runway is probably, I want to say it's probably on an 8% slope.
Uh-huh.
So as you're coming in, the runway looks weird. The whole, but you land and you just, as you're flaring, you're just kind of like following it and you just keep rolling uphill.
Yeah, it looks shorter than it is because of the uphill.
It freaked me out. I had my hand on the throttle ready to go around, but I mean, I put it right down just around the numbers, and I was like, okay, this doesn't look like I've got enough runway. And you put it down and you're slowing down, and you still have a bunch of room ahead. And you're like, wow, that was really deceiving. And then you know, we pulled in and, you know, went back up again later, and then I had an opportunity to fly down to Castle Air Force Base. It's a former Strategic Air Command base. A lot of people in California know it because it's got a 12,000 foot runway, and as does Mather. So it's the joke.
That's usually enough.
Yeah, the joke with Castle is you could literally start down at the numbers at one end, take off, land, stop, do that successfully three times, and be, you know.
Night current.
Yeah, you're all current. You're all current and never leave the length of the runway. It's just when we were landing, we actually we were going to do an ILS approach, but the ILS was out, so we just had we just came in on the localizer, and my buddy was with me, and he's like, okay, we're all good, and we're lined up, and he's, you know, kind of helping me figure out what I'm supposed to be looking for, and we're coming in, and We're at a half mile out, and it still looked like we were 4 miles out. The runway is that big. It's just, we're like, okay, wow. I'm coming in, and you keep going and going and going, and all of a sudden this just massive piece of asphalt just comes up underneath you, and so we didn't have to taxi for, you know, half an hour. We did kind of a high speed taxi halfway down the runway to exit. We actually went to a giant scale RC event, spent about a half a day there, but went and saw some people that I haven't seen in several years. That was kind of cool. But then coming back was a breeze. We headed straight home, and we had a good time there. I don't know if I had talked about before, right after the event with the kids, it was before the trip to Castle. I had the opportunity with the group that's up there in that at Auburn, the Auburn Aviation Association. Every so often they try to put together a mass flyout. You know, get a group of aircraft together. And you know, last year they were into the Bay Area somewhere to meet with a bunch of the 99s and some of the very senior, early, you know, early members of the 99s group there. And we weren't able to make that yet. I didn't have my license at the time. So that was 2 years ago. Time flies. And so the year before that, they actually did a mass flight to Catalina. That one I wanted to go on to, but we just had my daughter, I think, had a soccer tournament, club soccer tournament that same weekend. So this year, because of the executive director of the Capital Air Show, she's very good friends with the Patriots jet team and the founding member, Randy Howell. If those of you that don't know, the Patriots jet team is like, I think the one back east is Heavy Metal. Is that the one?
Yeah.
It's a group of L-39s.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay.
Is that who they are? So Heavy Metal would be on the east coast, and then the Patriots are on the west coast. Their major sponsor is Fry's Electronics. So they're one of three, I think is what it is now, civilian jet teams. Everybody on the team, with the exception of one guy, is either a former Thunderbird or a former Blue Angel. So they know what they're doing, absolutely. And they practice and they train. The entire team is volunteer, including the pilots, the ground, the crew chiefs, the maintenance, all the maintenance people. Everybody is volunteer. So they have the opportunity. They're stationed in Byron, California, which is south of the San Francisco base and the whole south of the Silicon Valley. And if I could pull it up. Anyway, we did a big group, and I actually flew the Aero. It was myself, my daughter Haley, and another gentleman that I got to know very well. He's also one of the team leads for the air show. Come to find out, I didn't know what his extent in aviation was. I just knew that he was obviously into flying and into aviation. Well, come to find out, after everything, and I'll explain what I mean by after everything, he had flown in the Navy for 22 years, carrier landings. I mean, he was a Navy fighter pilot. And he's a very quiet, demure, very nice gentleman. Never said a word. Very calming voice. And then he flew commercial for probably another dozen years. So we got to go to see their hangar in Byron, and it is an amazing facility. I think it's 30 or 40,000 square feet. I'm looking up there. I'm looking up the identifier for Byron. So it was really kind of cool. One of the things that we did beforehand, and I thought we had talked about this before, because I thought you guys had asked me some questions about it, but we had the opportunity before this group flight to learn civilian, what do they call it? Friendly formation flying, mm-hmm. which means about a 300-foot separation. You know, you don't want to get any closer than about 300 feet. But the owner of the school and one of their new flight instructors are both former F-15 guys.
That don't work for them.
Well, it was good to have that. It was good to have them because I forgot his call sign. Homer. Homer gave the brief, and we talked, and he ran the pre-flight briefing like a military operation. So when people were late, you could tell it really bothered him. You know, he's like, I'm trying to, you know, hack time is this. Meeting starts at this time, and people are walking in 5 minutes later, and he's like, you know, and he's a little guy too, so he was fired up. We went through the whole thing and we briefed it. And then he goes, okay, for those of you that want to fly formation, let's find, you know, similar aircraft and And then once you find who you're going to pair with, I got paired with a guy in a Mooney, he flew lead only because he's done it before. He's one of the school CFIs, and he owns his own. The Mooney is his, so he's very comfortable with that airframe. And I was, you know, low time with the aero, and we briefed it, and it was. You know, it's really cool. They talk about, you know, frequencies, the different how frequencies work, and you know, you're on a secondary frequency as the wingman, and your whole sole job is to be off his wing and don't do anything else and don't run into him.
Well, that's the thing about, you know, being the lead guy. I consider that to be the easier position because he's got no one to run into.
True, but
you're the one that's constantly having to make corrections.
But he's doing all the work of flying, navigating, and communicating.
Bingo. That was the task. We were gonna switch on the way back, and I was gonna fly lead, or he wanted me to fly lead, and I actually declined. I'm like, you know what? I'm not comfortable enough in this airframe yet. And then the winds were starting to pick up that afternoon too, which was part of the morning briefing. We knew what the winds were going to be when we got back, and that's a whole other story. But needless to say, I already had my alternate planned. The airport right here, you know, down the street from my house, is exactly, it's 1533, and winds were at 33 at like 20 knots. So I knew that if I could make it at, you know, up at Auburn, which was it's 1500 feet and it's 0725, you know, I knew that if after I did make it after the second time, but I was just going to go right down to Lincoln and land right into the wind. So I wasn't too concerned, but I did find my new personal safety. Anyway, I'll come back to that. Byron's identifier is Charlie 83, and it's a really cool little airport. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it's been there forever. We got down to Byron. We actually had their crew chiefs. A couple other guys were there. They actually marshaled us in. We got to park in front of the hangar. One of the doors was open, and not only did you have 8 L-39s sitting in this hangar right there, there was also 2 MiG-15s, a Cessna. I want to say it's the Cessna Commander. It's one of their early corporate jets, and that name might not be right, but it's, you know, like a 60s era Learjet type of thing. But it's the Cessna one, We got a full tour. They're actually in the process of working with Discovery Canada to make a reality TV show. They were actually quite happy to be working with Discovery Canada because their script for reality TV is a lot different than the scripting of U.S. reality TV, where everything's got to be so serious and there's a problem. They don't, you know, if you watch the Buffalo Airways guys, not everything is a problem. You know, they don't try to dramatize it up too much. Mm-hmm. But we saw one of the previews for that. And it looks like it's going to be a really good show. Of course, you know, the one thing that we saw is something happened in an air show and, you know, the problem, you know. And he's like, yeah, the problem was I jumped out of my plane and I jumped in the spare and we took off and we flew the rest of the show. They don't make it seem so simple.
Oh, what are they going to do now?
Exactly. Yeah. So we get to see that. We got a full tour of the facility. We saw the maintenance. They actually have a rig that they go with, a tractor trailer, that it's like you see at Formula One events where the car is up on top and it's a full workshop below. They have that, and then they actually have a briefing room up in the front of the trailer. So we get to go through and see all that. What else? Oh, the big thing, which is the passion of Randy Howell. He's a former Air Force fighter pilot, tons of experience, thousands and thousands of hours. To meet and to see and to meet Randy, you wouldn't think that he's been around long enough to do as much as he's done, because he looks like he's in his mid-30s, and I know that he's older than that. He had a full Air Force career, flew with the Thunderbirds. He had a full career as a commercial pilot, where he met several of the people that are here local that he knows. And his whole passion, his whole reason for forming the team was for educating the next generation. In the middle of the hangar, and the hangar's actually in the process of being expanded on, is 26 stations, dual 26, I think there are 26 or 27 inch monitors, dual monitors, 26 stations, all of them are flight simulators, where they have, I think twice a week, they run ground school for kids, and they have their program is really designed for kids from like 12 to 17 or 18, so basically junior high to high school kids. And I believe the whole program for the kids is free. So they're going to get ground school. They're going to get, you know, some of the simulator flight training. And there may be a cost to it, because I actually, now that I think about it, I think there was a young man there that to pay for his portion of it, he was, you know, basically cleaning the hangar and sweeping and doing, you know, small tasks like that. But from what I picked up, I don't think that there's – I think the foundation, the Patriot Jets Foundation, pays for a big chunk of it. Great program. Super, super program.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, and anybody with aviation experience can become a volunteer, and you can either turn wrenches on the MiGs under the supervision of, obviously, you know, the maintenance chief there. You can actually, depending on your background, you can actually, you know, work on the L-39s. It's an amazing place. The opportunity that they put out there is amazing. It's the only word I can come up with. All of the pilots and crew that we met are just true gentlemen. You know, you would expect, you know, these hot shots, and now they're civilians and they're going to be crazy. No, these guys are as squared away, if not more, than when they were military. Just because you're no longer wearing the uniform, I think there's even more of a risk management that they have to be aware of, because they're a civilian jet team. I think there's a bigger microscope on them. But these guys are very successful. You know, they started off with two jets, and then slowly but surely built it up to four, then six, and now they have eight. And Randy's been the one that goes overseas. He goes into Europe, into Eastern Europe. He finds these, he inspects them, and once that passes inspection, then they have to tear the whole thing apart. They put it in a crate and then ship it on, you know, the slow boat, you know, around China. And he says it's a scary process. He goes, because, you know, you're paying cash for a lot of this stuff. And he goes, they haven't been, how can I say this, taken advantage of, but they know of other people who have been, where you pay all this cash out, you watch this thing get packed up, and you never get your property. That's just, he says, it's part of the risk you take buying from Eastern Europe sometimes. So, but anyway, we had a great spread there too. It was pizza and sodas and salads, and, you know, and they catered the whole thing, and we were there probably, I want to say, a solid 3 hours, and Randy was like, okay, I gotta go, and he goes, I have another event that I've got to go to, and he's like, you're welcome to stay as long as you want, but I gotta, so he jumped in his, I want to say it was probably a 410 or something like that, and twin engine, and they had to go to another charity event. And that's all he strives for, is educating the future and mm-hmm. I mean, we're dwindling number of pilots as it is, and so his dream is to get more and more kids involved, and in, you know, young kids all the way up through, like I said, high school. Because, you know, if we're not the ones, it's kind of like is it Dan Pimentel and the thing that he's got going on with Oshbash.
Oh yeah.
If we don't do it, nobody else will, and the numbers of pilots, like I said, are dwindling every day. So, you know, whatever we can do to get the next generation involved, and it just makes it better for everybody.
Absolutely.
So anyway, we ended up taking off out of there, and like I said, the guy that I was flying formation with, I declined, and because we knew the winds were going to be picking up, and on the way back it wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, it's when you're in the air, you're in the air. It's not that big a deal. So we cruised on home, and we got back, and it started. By the time we got back up to just south of Mather, it was really starting to get bumpy. It was a hot day also, which didn't help. But the winds were, I think they were 18 gusting to 27 or something like that, and it was exactly almost a crosswind. So I gave it one shot, and I was going really good, and as I'm turning on final, there's a dip, and I think I've talked about this before at the approach end of 25, mm-hmm. which is the standard runway. There's a dip down there that causes it develops a lot of turbulence. So you always plan for that, and you just kind of like fly through that, and then, you know, you're stabilized and you plan for it, but you got to be able to recover from it quickly. Well, as I'm coming in, I got a direct, you know, 12 to 18 knot crosswind, I guess, and I'm already fighting that, and then I hit that turbulence down there in this little valley, and next thing I know, I'm over on the edge of the runway, and I'm like, okay, that's not working. So I throttled up and went around and gear up, jump back in the pattern, and tried it again, and Tim out of the back, the former Navy aviator, pops up, and he goes, "You're doing great." He goes, your approach was very good. He goes, "But my recommendation was let's line up on the right hand side of the runway this time." And, you know, he's very calming, and so I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And so we're crabbed in, and I'm doing my thing, and I come down a great approach again, and, you know, stabilized approach again as best you can with that kind of thing, and I'm all ready to, you know, full throttle and go around again. And or, yeah, like I told him, I said, if I don't put it on the ground this time safely, we're going to Lincoln, and we'll have my wife pick me up or pick us up. We'll drive back up here, and I'll bring it back up when it's safe. And he goes, okay, that works for me. He goes, you're thinking ahead. Let's get this. Let's just get down safe. And so we make the approach again, and start off on the right hand side, and it as we go over the turbulence at the end of the runway, we get behind a line of trees. It calms down just enough. I set it down on the pretty close to the center line, cut the power, stayed on the ground, pulled the flaps up. I'm like, okay, we're planted. We're not going anywhere. And yeah, and just let it roll out. But I was, I literally found my personal minimum, because by the time we got back on the ground, I was exhausted. That just that approach and flying that pattern in those, that type of a crosswind, with it gusting like that. I mean, if it was a consistent, you know, 20 knots, I wouldn't have tried to land it in 20 knots anyway, but just the gusting, that's what kind of messed with me. And to be able to get it safely down, and, you know, it wasn't pretty, but I didn't bounce it, and I didn't porpoise it at all.
That's a great landing.
Yeah. Nothing's bent, and everything is, you know, we got good tires, and after we're down and we're rolling out, Tim reaches up out of the back seat, and he pats me on the shoulder. He's all, "I've been in some hairy landings." And he goes, "That was nice." I was like,
"Nice,
thank you." Well, you just made my day. And then I calm down, and we, you know, taxi off, and then do all the rest of the checklist. But that was a really good day, and that was one that I, you know, like I said, it was a great day overall, but then to have that, and then to have a little bit of confirmation from somebody who's been doing this a whole lot longer than I have been or probably ever will, was nice to have. So to wrap the whole story up, I mean, that's it was a great day. It was we tried to film it, but I had my GoPro with the brand new suction mount that I had to go buy, and my daughter was in charge of that and failed to turn the GoPro on both times, out and back. So I have zero video footage of the formation flying.
So that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think I tried to have her take a couple of pictures with either her iPhone or mine, and I have to go through all the pictures. I haven't looked at my iPhone pictures in a long time, but if I do have any, I'll make sure that we get them uploaded. But that adventure was the castle one was the last one that I did. That was probably 3 weeks ago. So, yeah, I have to say I really enjoy flying the Arrow. I like having the constant speed prop. Now that I'm starting to understand it better, how that whole thing works, it was one of those anomalies that I'm like, okay, I get the whole constant speed prop thing, but when you actually have to put it into practice, it's different, you know, in the whole thing of your numbers squared, you know, you're going to fly 24, 24, 23, 23, whatever it is, and whatever works for that airframe, it makes sense now. And then, you know, you're making little adjustments here and there. And so it's cool. On the way back from Byron, at one point in time, we had like ground speed of like 185 knots or something. And you're like, there's no way I'd get this in the Archer. Matter of fact, we had a pair of Cessnas, a pair of 172s that we flew past. The Archer was by itself. We flew past it. So the Mooney and the Arrow together, and then we're watching these other planes. It's like, oh, see ya.
Nice.
They took off like 10 minutes before us, and we got there, you know, 15 minutes, got home 15, 20 minutes before they did. So I was like, okay, this makes sense. And it's only $10 an hour difference. Okay. So now I'm already starting to plan longer trips, you know?
Yeah. Now you got something with some legs.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And how big are the tanks in that one?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't want to throw a number out there and sound stupid, but, what's the one you have?
The three can carry 77 gallons.
Okay. I'd have to check. I don't want to throw a false number out there, but I know it's definitely more than the Archer, which is only like 40 gallons. So, yeah. I know that we were talking. I was talking to Dennis about it, and you know he plans trips. He goes down to LA, you know, once in a while, and he goes, yeah, no problem. So, I told him that I might want to. I have my daughter has a tournament in Vegas in February, and he goes, not a problem. You'd be there in 3 hours. And I was like, wow. Okay. It's better than a 12-hour drive.
Right. It sure beats driving.
Yeah. She just had a tournament in Park City, and I almost did that one. But my wife said, nah, we'll drive. We'll go. And you go to work and do what you got to do. And I'm like, but you don't get the point. I don't want to go to work, and I want to fly. So, no. But I usually am the one that goes to all these tournaments, so it was good for her to be able to have a chance to go and enjoy them too. So that's basically all the flying that I've been doing. My next thing that I'm going to do, probably just after Osh, is I'm going to get my high performance, because I'm right at 90. I think the last time I looked, I was at 92 hours, and to do a Form 5 for Civil Air Patrol, I need 100 hours.
That's 100 hours PIC, though.
Correct. Yeah, I'm actually at 100. I think my total time right now is 125.
Okay, cool.
So, so when I'm saying high 90s, that's the PIC.
Man, I'm behind.
Yeah, you got to catch up, man.
So we actually,
you're all busy getting married and buying houses and stuff.
Yeah, all that.
Trying to be all responsible.
Hey, man, I'll have another 3 hours here at the end of, or beginning of August.
Good. Good. So we have access to a 182RG. So
yeah. Is that what Cap flies up there?
No. This is the one that they have access to through the flight school.
Oh, okay. All right. Because Cap just is a 182.
Right.
Right. And, not an RG.
Right. And we're about to get either a 182 G1000 or a 206 G1000. So,
ooh, 206, interesting.
Actually, yeah, I'm looking right now. I'm on my flight school's website, and they have a 182 RG for, what is it, $185 an hour?
That's about
and,
right.
And they just got a Cherokee, and I'm seriously considering that.
Is that a 140?
Yeah, 140B.
Oh, it is?
1969. It's bright yellow, but it's 125 an hour.
Nice. They're fun.
Is it a 140, 160 with 160 horse? Yeah.
So, like I said, that's my next thing is I'll get the high performance so I can then turn around and do. By the time I go through all of that, I'll have enough hours that I can do my Form 5 for Cap.
That's Capfly is the 182 fixed, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Very nice. Bradley, you've got a flight to talk about?
Just a little one.
Just a quick one?
No, I noticed that I fired up Log 10, and it gives me my stats, and it said, in the last 28 days, you've flown 0 hours, and I needed to fix that, because that's supposed to happen in January, not in June.
Right.
So, because we didn't have a chance to fly our aerial survey once again, the weather gods came up against us. It was IFR and thunderstorms and 25 knot gusts, and it's like, I don't think I want to spend the afternoon cleaning your lunch out of the inside of the plane. So we're going to do this another day. It wouldn't have been legal anyway. I couldn't have maintained cloud clearance. I could have flown over IFR in actual with embedded thunderstorms in the region. And if that wasn't stupid enough, then I'd have to fly an approach to an airport. Once I get below the deck, cancel IFR, and then fly illegally over to the place to do the survey, all in, you know, gusty conditions with really sketchy visibility.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like you made the right choice.
Yeah, this isn't a hard one, guys. We're staying on the ground. So in lieu of that, yesterday I happened to have a night kind of free, and so headed up to the airport, grabbed the aero, and since I'm going to be flying it a bit more this month, flew it around just to make sure that I could. And my plan was to actually stay late enough to get three more night landings. I am night current, instrument current, all that. But it would have been nice to get just to do some more night landings. And a very massive storm cell had rolled through and cleaned out the air. It went from really hot and humid to really cool and nice and dry. And the storm cell had left probably a couple hours before I took off. And I just started flying around, and I was just tooling around the Class Bravo, chatting with all the control towers and whatnot, and started to see some, you know, a little bit of scud kind of poking up and around. And I got my attention in a hurry, but I had an easy out, and I knew I could get out if I just turned around and went back the way I was. So I kind of kept motoring on and flew past said scud and was chatting with St. Paul's Tower and started to see some big stuff start to move in. And as I got closer back to my home drone, this is only about a 50-minute flight or something. As I started to get closer to Crystal, I noticed that to the north of Crystal, there was a layer of ground fog because of from the pouring rain and the sudden drop in temperature. The ground was nice and wet and warmer than the air. So there was ground fog. It looked like it was all the way on the deck. So I'm like, get me out of here, because I did not want to spend the night in some podunk Minnesota hotel where, you know, because I'd have to fly quite a ways in order to get to someplace I could land. And really, the only way I could go was west, and west of here is the Dakotas. So I was like, all right, get me on the ground. So I got in, and it was fine, and the thunderstorms, I don't think we got hit with any more thunderstorms that night. And I managed to maintain VFR and all that good stuff. But, you know, just a little easy flight, and I managed to make a nice squeaker landing, and I'm very happy about that. Later on in the month, The weekend that Oshkosh starts, actually, I'm going to Madison for an event down there that I'm going to attend. And then I have to hustle back Sunday morning, so I won't be shooting the Fisk approach. In fact, I'll be dodging all of the other traffic that's going into Oshkosh as I depart Madison and head up towards the Twin Cities. But then, as Mark alluded to earlier, he's going to fly in and arrive, dark 30 a.m. on Thursday morning, and I'll either pick him up in the Aero at MSP or pick him up in the van at MSP and drive up to Crystal, and then we can depart. I was just doing some more weight and balance calculations, and if I can get the fuel down to 40 gallons before the wheels lift off the ground, then we'd be light enough for Mark and I to both be in the front. But seeing that Mark will have just gotten off of a red eye, I don't know that he's going to be awake through the duration of the flight anyway.
It's flying. I'll be awake.
Oh yeah.
I don't like. Well, that's the thing is, I can't. I rarely fly. I rarely sleep on a red eye. It's flying. So you know, I'll be wide awake. I'll cough you up.
You might want to fly. You might want to sleep on the red eye because you're not going to get any sleep once you get to Osh.
I was thinking about that this afternoon. Actually, I went for my run this afternoon, and I'm thinking about all the stuff I got coming up. I'm like, you know, I'm going to be up all day. Yeah, I'm gonna just see. I'm gonna have to maybe take some melatonin or something and get some Z's on the red eye.
Yeah, you're gonna want to sleep because it's fairly hard to sleep with the Thunderbirds and the T6s every morning at 6 o'clock and the P-51s buzzing around. And
there's nothing like the Aeroshell team as your alarm clock.
Oh yeah,
that is pretty cool.
I do have lots of earplugs. That makes it easier.
No.
And sleeping
no,
under the C-47.
No earplugs.
Sleeping under the C-47 at KidVenture is a really nice place to find some space and some shade. Not that I've ever done that before. So yeah, I'm getting ready. I ordered my printed NOTAM for Oshkosh. And getting all psyched for that. Like I said, doing my weight and balance calculations and trying to figure all this stuff out. John dumped us, so now poor Mark and I have got to find a place to stay. I don't know where Chris is staying. I think he's sleeping underneath Larry's trailer or something.
No, I've already got feelers out there. I've got two possible locations.
And with that, I think you guys have some possible locations too, so you should be fine. You know, I'm bringing the tent. I just might not have a place to set it up.
Yeah, here's the tent, guys. You can't be in it.
I've got two tents.
I was going to say, I contacted Larry on the via instant message on Twitter, and he said, "Don't worry about it. We'll make space. You're more than welcome." You know, he's like, "We always have room, or we'll make room," kind of thing. So
it yeah. works out. It really does.
Yeah,
you guys won't have any issues,
right? And if the weather stinks, we can just drive in too.
So Brad, how far of a walk is it, or a hike is it, from where we're gonna park to where Camp Bacon is?
2 miles.
I would say it's probably about 2 miles. You could physically walk it, but not obviously carrying all of our gear.
It wouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
Could you grab a cab over there by the hotel? Is that where you're going to park?
I'll be in the North 40. Okay. So not, you know, somewhere near the Motel 6 that okay. where UCAP does their stuff.
Yeah.
And you can walk out through, there's a line of FBOs on the north side.
Yeah.
And you can get out through there. And last year, Ron Klutz was kind enough to pick Aiden and I up. And we stuffed his rental car with stuff and he drove us back to Camp Bacon. There's a bus that you can take that'll get you to the gate. Unfortunately, it's not the gate where we can get in. So yeah, either a cab or calling ahead to arrange some kind of transportation will probably
be in order. I'm sure we can find you away from over there.
So Brad, were you done talking about all your flying?
Yeah, I'm pretty well through.
Okay, so now that we're on the segue talking about Osh, let's talk about, okay, for the first timer, me, what all
do you recommend for the first timer to bring besides really comfortable shoes?
Another pair of really comfortable shoes.
Yeah, socks. Lots of socks. Clothes for three seasons.
Yeah, I was going to say it's it's typically like 90 during the day.
Typical. Typical.
With 90 degrees worth of or 90% humidity. And then at night it's beautiful. It's like 65.
Were you there last year?
Yes, it was like 100 last
no,
year.
No, it was like 72 every
it
day
was,
last year.
It was like 78.
That was the year before it was 100.
Oh, that was
the
year before?
Day.
Okay. All right.
And in the year before that, I think it was 2 years before that. It was just
that
rain
was
all the way before.
That was
so
slosh-gosh. Yeah.
It's totally unpredictable. You have no idea what it's going to be like.
Last year when we flew in, Neil and I was just like getting on getting in a car to be driven over to Oshkosh from Appleton, there was a storm. And a matter of fact, Brad was, I think you were.
I drove in it. Year.
You drove?
Last year was IFR. Two years ago, I drove.
2 years ago was the one that I picked you up, and we drove through that storm.
Yeah. But last year there was a ridiculous storm too. And it was just minutes before we actually got to Oshkosh. No, and that was actually no. Wait, man, yeah. I can't remember because that was the year that you picked us up.
Yeah, because we drove because it was coming when I was picking you up, and then we drove through it, and we came back. We found out that at least one plane had flipped, and there was the tents were still up. But
yeah, and I drove through that same storm.
Yeah, and then we had a gust front. That's Friday.
Because last year Neil and I went directly to the beer bash.
Yeah, that was a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you saw the B-17 flying in, flying out.
Yeah, I got some good photos of that.
Okay, coming back to the rookie and what he needs.
Sorry.
As you can tell,
very good sunblock.
Overwhelmed.
Exactly.
Sunblock, mosquito repellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
The kind that you can bring on an airliner.
So that's a great thing right there, John, because that kind of stuff, because I'm only going to take a carry-on, because I'm packing with the intent to get into a GA. So I'm only going to have, like, a carry-on.
Oh, don't worry. Anything that you have that won't fit, we'll just leave in the van.
So
there is a Target there, so you can go buy stuff.
And there's a Red Barn that's north of Camp Bacon, about 200 yards, where you can buy some stuff.
Okay.
And they restock it daily.
Is there any kind of laundry type facilities there? Or am I packed for 5 days?
It's across the street ish. So you can do it.
You're gonna need to share a car with somebody.
You would need to get a car. But if you can find somebody who you know is willing to do it, we will be, but we probably will be doing that the day you guys arrive. But what we do is we found it's
But that's okay, because really, you'll have thrown up all over your clothes after flying with me, and so you'll need to do some laundry right away.
There are two yolks in that plane.
Ooh.
Oh.
Nice. Challenge accepted.
Exactly.
did I mention you're going to be in the
drop
back?
It off.
Yeah. The ballast.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay.
You can drop it off in the morning, and they'll fold it and wash it, and it'll be done. Couple hours later.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of what else. Extra
There's,
shoes.
Our
sunglasses.
Our campsite's within a nice short walking distance of the showers.
A hat.
Which is nice.
And the showers are directly next to the entrance where you would go in, so that's nice. Yeah.
So flip-flops. And
yeah.
Bring your EAA card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Bring photo ID so that you can get your
admittance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Taken care of. Bring your credit card. Bring a desire for kind of greasy, you know, Wisconsin food and beer.
Great.
Bring your liver.
All this working that I've been doing.
I'm buying fruit at the Target.
Fruit. What does that mean? A wine cooler?
Hey man, I need the useful load, and I'm going to be drinking my fair share of calories. So.
We won't have a shortage of beverages at Camp Bacon.
Bring your Jeremiah weed.
Oh,
that's on my bucket list. So we're gonna have to hit that while I'm there.
Oh, that is happening.
He's gonna have it.
Okay, I'm adding that to the list.
Yeah, John can bring all this stuff. You can't bring that on the plane. I don't think you can even pack Jeremiah Weed in the underneath the belly of the plane. I think that's on the FAA banned list.
You can
take it.
You can.
Why not? I mean, if you don't open it.
We brought alcohol back from Missouri that we had bought there on checked luggage.
It wasn't Jeremiah Weed.
No, it was Malibu rum.
Ew. All right, I'll comment about that later.
Because I brought back tequila from Mexico, so.
When we were on our cruises, they said you could bring back actually 2/5 of liquor, 2 full handles of liquor, basically.
Yeah, yeah. There's limits on it with customs, mm-hmm. And then I'm assuming Royal Caribbean took them from you at the gate.
Well, we didn't do it. We just asked what we were allowed, and they said you could bring 2 bottles.
They don't let you actually take it to your room, because then you wouldn't be drinking theirs.
Back on topic again.
Anyways.
Squirrel. Think of a few things that you, like seminars or events that you want to attend. Might want to watch the Thunderbirds. I don't know. They'll be performing every day we're there.
And then throw that schedule out the window.
Exactly. I've tried that 3 years in a row. Well, actually, I did it the first 2 years making a schedule, and then the last year I just winged it because I never made it to anything that I planned. So, that's not true.
I do this? You know, when the Thunderbirds are out before they go do their brief, I'll introduce you to my friend on the team.
There you go. What's her name?
I knew you were going to do that.
Oh, I busted.
Yeah, no.
Oh, he was trying to name drop, sort of, and that kind of backfired.
No. But
at least decide the kinds of planes that you want to see. Like, if you want to go look at the vintage aircraft, or if you want to go up to Warbird Alley, or if you want to go down and look at the ultralights, and at least have an idea, have a map, and have an idea where these things are, because you will do a ridiculous amount of walking. In fact, I think I'll bring a pedometer this time. Just to see how far I go, because it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
We should do a trip and record a podcast down at the seaplane base.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've only been there once, and you should go to that, Mark, seaplane base. You have to take a...
And do it when you're tired. because it's so peaceful and quiet. Yeah.
And there's no walking. Once you get there, you're just there on the water, so...
Definitely mosquito repellent, because like I mentioned in the last podcast, we've had our 3 rainiest months in a row, and the mosquitoes will pick up small children and dogs and stuff and carry them off.
It's going to be like, it was 2009, yeah, it was Sloshkosh.
2010.
Mosquitoes, I thought it was, oh yeah, it was 10, when the mosquitoes basically had N numbers on them, so.
Yeah, that was. I was staying at Fond du Lac, and it would get dark when the mosquitoes flew over you.
I assume, what do you call it? The beer bash is still on with those guys.
The UCappers?
Yeah.
Usually it's on Thursdays.
It's usually like Thursday at like 5 or 6 or something.
3 of the 4 of us are not going to be there for Osh Bash this year because it's on Tuesday.
We're live streaming that or something, so I'll be there.
Yeah.
What was the John? Didn't you post something about something going on Thursday afternoon or evening, a meetup or something? I swear I saw something today.
I haven't posted anything.
We typically do our Potapalooza on Friday.
Okay,
but that's called other people. Well, what is that called?
Well, that's going to be Open Airplane.
Open Airplane, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, let me open up my calendar here.
Oh, it was them, and it's going to be on Thursday.
Open Airplane?
Sure? No. Yeah.
It was always Friday.
It was on Twitter.
It's Friday, 6:30, on the 1st. Friday the 1st.
At the Sennheiser booth, right?
Okay.
Potapalooza, Sennheiser tent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually Friday, and the beer bash is usually Thursday.
And considering that's coming from Dave, I'm assuming that is correct. Because he put that on the calendar, so...
So where can our listeners meet up with us? We're going to have to have an event.
Great point.
Camp Bacon.
Well, yeah, we can invite them to the home office, and they can see us when we're grouchy and crabby.
Grouchy and crabby, or drunk and happy.
Son.
Liquored up.
I'm thinking liquored and happy.
Yeah.
There's no
off
the throttle for like 3 days.
I'm gonna be pretty much parked there. So.
So the tent in Camp Bacon's gonna have power, so we can charge all of our.
There will be power. You will have plenty.
Yeah, there's generators.
A couple of RVs with generators. Yeah, and right next door to us on the other side of the road is a Wi-Fi hut, they call it, and there's plug-ins and Wi-Fi. You'll be able to get Wi-Fi from the campsite, actually.
You might want to bring a camera.
Oh, there you go.
I'm thinking about which one I want to bring. I've got my good Canon.
That's what I'm bringing.
But I don't know. You know, I may come up with a smaller one that's got actually better resolution. My wife won't let me buy the 70D yet.
Bring both. That's what I'm doing. I just ordered an extra 16 gig SD card today.
I just ordered a 32.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. That's what I ordered was a 32.
I was going to say, why would you order a 16?
I have
a 16. Well, I have two 16s and one 32, so I ordered an extra 32.
See, I just ordered a new 3 terabyte hard drive recently, so.
Nice.
For Osh.
Oh, you know what else I'm going to order? That I have a 14,000 milliamp, you know, external power brick. I'm going to order another one of those. I found one that has 50,000 milliamps.
Oh, Mark?
Mm.
Yeah.
Headphones. Like headset. Like a headset for aviation.
Oh, yeah. I'll bring my Bose.
That'll do better than the busted up David Clarks we have lying around.
Yeah.
I always, you're obviously flying in, but I always bring my flight bag with me. Just, you never know. I always have my logbook and my flight bag because you never know what you're going to get into.
I was talking with...
That would look good walking onto the plane.
I was talking with my buddy Eric.
Exactly. Sorry, Chris.
What's this? I always bring my own headset whenever I fly, just in case.
I was trying to get a paramotor flight with my buddy Eric, who's going to be there. He's actually going to be on assignment, though, for Flying Magazine. So I don't know if I'll be able to do that or not. But
maybe we should all do the tri-motor.
I was thinking about what we could do that I haven't done yet.
Or the B-17.
Oh, my God. That's
I would love to, but or considering the, that I'm buying a
or the B-29.
Yeah.
That's not
going
to happen.
Fifi, that's like $1,500.
I think we should do a dinner. Too.
We need to go out to dinner as a team one night.
It looks like probably Thursday would be the night to do that.
Really? Right off the bat?
I think so.
After the beer bash?
Because I probably won't be able to make it to the beer bash. I might show up for a little bit, but Thursday is probably the best night for me.
So we obviously don't want to forget our t-shirts and polos.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Look professional.
Our custom polos. You got to bring those. That's mandatory.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
I love that polo, Brad.
I don't think John wore it once.
I wear it all the time.
I wear mine every time I go flying.
No, I did. I wear it at Potapalooza. Because I'm wearing the blue shirts most of the week, but I always wear it to Potapalooza. And I wear it all the time around here. I wear that, and then I wear the AcroCamp one I have all the time, which is hilarious because everybody's like, did you buy it like that? Because the logo's upside down.
I can't tell you how often people go, they're like, was that? I'm like, no, it's that day. It's upside down on purpose. This is what it's all about. Like, oh, okay.
It's seriously so smart because it starts the conversation.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. I mean, like, I'll be in the grocery store and they'll just be looking at me like, what? I'm like, the shirt? And they're like, yeah.
Especially out here because on the West Coast they have ARCO stations. And they look out and they're like, ARCO camp? What's that? No, read it again.
ARCO gas, yeah.
Exactly. Read it again. It's acro. Yeah. I try to be very, very pleasant, polite with them, but I'm like, and then they look at the collar because I don't know if John, if on yours it actually has
inverted vomins.
Yeah, they're like,
yep.
What's that mean? Oh Jesus.
So I'm kind of local to AirVenture ish. I mean, this is pretty close to my. It's less than one tank flight. It's less than a half tank flight. And so, what do you guys bring? I mean, what? What do y'all from parts yonder bring up to Oshkosh?
Wow.
A myriad of different types of clothing.
I bring a car. I bring 8 million types of electronic gadgets from chargers to power cables to computers to monitors, iPads, batteries,
printers,
lots of batteries. No, I bring this year I'll probably bring half a week's worth of clothes. Definitely a sleeping bag, and after last year, a blanket, because I mean it was, you know, 40 degrees at night. It was cold.
It wasn't 40, but it was probably
it was probably 45 the first night.
Wow,
it got down to 45 the first night, and it was about 50 after most of the nights after that. So I'll definitely be bringing that this year. I started the first couple of years bringing a whole bunch of camping gear, and then realized that it was kind of pointless. Like trying to cook and stuff like that at the campsite, it was just too difficult. So,
Now if we were bringing this, if we were bringing the six, I would bring, you know, like the gas grill, you know, not like a little Smokey Joe kind of Weber kind of thing. I'd bring like the whole gas grill.
Wow.
But that's the six.
I as long as I have a cooler full of beer and I have, you know, some stuff to make some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or something with some bananas and maybe some clementines, I'll be fine. So I always do bring a cooler, though. I'm trying to think of what else we bring. A tent and lots of sunscreen, bug spray, hats, and that kind of stuff. Because it gets hot, you know, you want a lot of water and
Water sunscreen. Bottle.
Yeah, definitely a water bottle. I had a Camelback that I broke last year, which kind of disappointed me.
Or you can pay I think it was only like $1 a bottle or something last year. There was some deal on water.
Yeah, but if you bring a couple water bottles, there's just spots you can fill up for free.
Yeah.
That's true.
Which is nice. So I take advantage of that a lot.
Yep, drink a lot of water. Because it usually is pretty hot. I mean, for northern people, pretty hot. For Chris, it's like relaxing. He wears a coat.
80s, 90s.
No, the humidity is bad.
80s, 90s, humid, and sunny.
Well, there's clouds that roll in and out like all the time, it seems like.
But it's mostly sunny.
Oh, yeah, rain gear. Bring rain gear.
I always carry a poncho with me and some of that stuff, because I always have my backpack, too, that I carry around that has a whole bunch of stuff with me.
Yeah, and a backpack is a really nice way to get around the show, because you will pick up stuff, and you'll want to carry the water bottle and all the other stuff.
Or you're like me and carrying 8 million pounds of camera gear and stuff.
Yeah.
No, but I always keep a couple snacks with me, too, a couple granola bars or something, because, you know, you're out there in the middle of the field. You might get a little hungry. You don't feel like paying $10 for a greasy who knows what. I always liked having that kind of
the
stuff
food, I would do have to say the food was better last year, but you do have to wait for it most of the time.
And this year I'm going to finally, I've never made it over to the ultralights, so I'm going to make sure and hit that up this year.
Yeah, I would love to pair up from time to time. And I'm sure Aiden's going to want to hang out at Kidventure some more, but as he gets a little older, it probably is less and less each year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited.
Me too.
I am so excited. We're all going to be together.
Yay.
Aww.
Hey, Mark, I wanted to ask you something, because Mark has been into RC flying for quite some time and stuff.
Sure.
And you probably even, you know, have watched a lot of videos or even know people who do the, you know, the FPV flying and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the government regulation crackdown crap that they're complaining about, it annoys me the way people that is not familiar with that type of flying, how like dangerous they make it sound like these people are, and how just like unresponsible they are with their aircraft.
You mean like flying them through a fireworks display?
I thought that was pretty incredible. But they were out in the middle of water, right?
Yeah, that was one of
those things going off over top of...
Yeah, there was barges over water.
And
they actually had approval from the event, the people putting on the event and the people running the fireworks display. So they knew that the thing was going to be out there. And he said it was the full disclaimer ahead of time. If it gets hit by a firework and blown up, it's on you. And the guy was like, absolutely. I'll take that chance. And
it was incredible. The That was just amazing seeing that.
So, yeah, it's funny that you asked that.
But I think what I'm talking about is, like, these guys actually putting on the full-blown gear, and they're using a pair of goggles called, like, Land Sharks, I think.
Yeah.
They can fly these things out of sight for literally a few miles, like 5 kilometers or longer even sometimes. But every video that I've seen like that has been in a very unpopulated area.
Bingo.
Typically.
Bingo. So that's the thing that how can I say this? Majority of the people that you're going to see doing that are usually working for another, like a UAV company or another aerospace development company, where they're actually working on real, aeronautic design. But there's other people that have more money that they know what to do with that want to go get all the toys. Most of those guys have been flying RC long enough that they understand the rules that are already governed by the AMA. And they tend to fly safe. Now, the ones, and, you know, as long as I've been flying RC, you know, 20 plus years, you're always going to get the guy that's just a tool, that doesn't pay attention to the rules, that flies towards the flight line, that, you know, that will fly opposite pattern or whatever. And those people exist in every aspect of the world. But for the majority of the people that I've seen fly, they fly safe and they fly it in a safe manner. It's funny though that you asked that. My company, we do a lot of civil engineering, and we hire we hire companies to fly our sites and do photometric. They create topographic maps for us but they fly a site, they're constantly taking pictures, and they have software that will actually generate the topography for us and any site features, and then we get that from them. It's not cheap. I mean, it could be $15,000 to $20,000 per site, and we're only talking maybe a 1 or 2 acre site, but we have much larger sites that we have to have flown. One of my associates up in our Redmond office has one of the JDI Phantom, I think is what it's called.
The white one.
UAS or UAV. And he's been experimenting with using that and a GoPro Black, and he actually just did a brown bag lunch on it, and then I presented it to my office. But he actually has gone out, and there's through Autodesk, which is the majority of the software that we use for the CAD work. But Autodesk is going out into other areas, and one of them happens to be photogrammetrics, I think is the right word. But you'll take a series of photos, up to like 200 photos, and the software will be able to through those photos look and build you what's almost like point cloud data. It's almost like LiDAR type data, where they know that rock face is this, and here it's there, and the difference in every frame, they can build the software will run through and build a model from. So he's been experimenting with this, and I showed this to my staff here in my office in Sacramento, and one of the associates on our office came up to me. And he goes, "What would that cost? What are we talking about? $5,000, $6,000, $7,000?" I said, "Honestly, the GoPro is $300, and the Phantom I think is probably like $299, $300." And I said, "You know, some batteries and other stuff." I said, "I could probably have the whole thing for like $600 or $700." He's like, "Really?" He's all, "And you could do this?" And I said, "Absolutely, I can do this. I've been flying."
Not legally.
Well, here's the thing. Our guy up in Redmond who did this, he did a bunch of investigation. There is nothing right now that says you can't, for your company, do that work. There's actually companies. There's one matter of fact. There was a big thing in Seattle. This lady freaked out and called the cops, because there was one of these UAVs outside of her – a quadcopter outside of her window. And she calls the cops and said, "Hey, somebody's spying on me, da-da-da." Well, it turns out it's one of these aerial photo companies that's expanding how they do their data collection to these quadcopters. they saw the thing on the news. Guy called up and said, no, we're legally doing this. We're doing this for this company, and they wanted us to fly this area. And the cops were like, the police department was like, okay, great, thanks.
But those guys are getting busted by the FAA for exactly that all the time.
Because it's commercial.
Because it's commercial.
True, but yeah. But there's a whole thing right now. There is nothing, from what I've seen and what they've presented me so far, and I haven't actually had a chance to go back and research this myself, but using a quadcopter for a commercial purpose is technically not against the FAA rules. There's nothing in there right now that says I can't take this out and fly and then turn around and sell you the picture.
I think that's exactly what they're trying to complain about, though.
Right, but Congress, it's going to have to go through a whole congressional hearings. Right now, there's nothing in writing that says that I can't do that. They don't agree with it. They don't want you to do it. Matter of fact, they made a new little card, and I actually, the AMA sent it to me. It's showing not only an RC plane, but they threw a quadcopter in there, and it says the do's and don'ts. Do's and don'ts.
And just for everybody's clarification, including mine, the AMA is
The Academy of Model Aeronautics. It's the RC world's governing body. If mm-hmm. you're a member of an RC club, you must also have be a member
insurance.
Of the. It's exactly. That's the primary.
You actually buy an insurance policy correct. Through them so, every year.
So when you become a member of the AMA, you get this coverage, so that if you run into a car or a house or hit somebody, you do have some insurance to go with that. So that's also why it's mandatory if you're going to join an RC club that you're also a member of the AMA. And the car guys have the same thing. It's Roar, I think. So it's the same kind of a governing body. But with that, to get that insurance, you also have to comply with a set of rules. That set of rules was agreed upon between the AMA and the FAA many years ago and is expanded on every year. AMA rules, there's nothing that says that I can't throw a camera on a quadcopter or in a plane or whatever, take pictures, turn around and sell those pictures or use those pictures for commercial use. That's the whole controversy right now is there's a lot of people out there that are using a quadcopter to do this kind of stuff. And they're saying, yeah, well, it's a commercial venture. Well, yeah. So show me where I can't do that. Now, again, that's my disclaimer here. I haven't personally taken the time to research that, but this is what.
And just to clarify real quick, I think what that is that as long as you're below 700 feet, because
400.
It's 400 to run an airport under AMA rules.
The FAA says
400.
I'm talking about Class G.
Yeah, the FAA says 400, no matter what.
Well, isn't Class G unregulated space from ground to 700?
It's uncontrolled. That doesn't mean it's not the FAA's airspace. Just because you can't fly IFR there, well, you can, but means it's uncontrolled.
So, Brad, let me clarify, because I also used to fly turbines, and part of the turbine waiver process, you had to go get certified. We had to actually, part of the test was that it's actually within 5 miles of any airport is 400 feet. If you're away, if I'm 5.5 miles from an airport, according to the FAA and according to the rules, I can fly up to 1,000 feet if I want, which I used to do on a regular basis with my jet, because I would do these big, looping circles with smoke on, and I guarantee you I was 1,000 feet sometimes. Mm-hmm. So.
I heard it was 400 and not at all within five.
No, there's actually RC clubs on airports.
That's true.
And they fly and they purposely.
Well, they got waivers.
Absolutely, but the agreement is that you'll see that you can when you go to look at the tetrahedron on there that you can only fly left pattern or right pattern. You can never fly on that side of the runway. That's all part of it. That they know that there's and they'll put it right there in the ATIS. Beware of RC, activities at this end of the field. Do not overfly. Matter of fact, when I was at Castle, that was part of the ATIS when we were there. It says, be aware of large RC activity at the north end of the field, and avoid it all, take off and immediately turn right, kind of thing. And that's what they have to put in there. There's right here at Lincoln, there used to be an RC club that was right outside the fence line, and that was in the ATIS, and it was an agreement with the city and the county, I believe, that they could be there, but they couldn't fly higher than 400 feet, period. So there's all kinds of, technicalities, and it gets pretty deep.
I put the link to the organization in our chat there if you want to go look up the documentation for all that stuff. But
yeah, that'll be in the show notes.
Anyways, it just kind of gets on my nerves when I hear other people talking about the dangers, and it's just like, it's just so few and far between. Well, it's like anything.
Well, what's funny is we had this discussion when the guy up in Redmond was doing his brown bag delivery. We were talking about the health and safety issues. And I actually had brought up an incident that I had just seen on the news, and it was actually on YouTube, where it was a guy in the Hamptons was out there with one of these – with a quadcopter, and he was just flying up and down the beach. And there was a young lady out there that was sunbathing, and she freaked out and went after the guy. Luckily, the JDI actually has an auto – like if you – something happens to the transmitter, it goes into an auto hover. And then low battery, it'll start to land itself. But, you know, she came and actually attacked him, tore his shirt. He had another camera on him. She calls the cop and said, you know, he was spying on me. And the cops get there and they look at his phone video and the GoPro video, and had nothing to do with her, but it has her assaulting him. She got arrested for second degree assault. And the guy, but it was just, he happened to be flying there. So that was one of the part of the health and safety thing that we had to bring up, is like, if you're going to do this and get into this venture, be aware of, hey, I'm not taking pictures of you. This is for this type of work, you know? So we actually had one of our corporate attorneys on that presentation too. And he had some advice, we'll just say, at this point in time. And we're actually having verbiage written up for him, because he's actually using the quadcopter on some sites to do some small sites where it's more cost effective to have him do it than to have an aerial photography company do it. And now my one of the associates in my office wants me to invest in this equipment and then set my side company up as a vendor so I can actually go out and fly some of their sites. So anyway, you just got to be careful out there, and you know, be smart. That's the only thing I could advise, you know, just like any radio control, you know, don't fly towards people, don't fly around people. And if you know what, you're starting to bother people, get away from them, you know, just be smart. It's just, that's what people, I've seen that for many years in RC, is that, you know, they get out there and they think, oh, it's just a toy, and they just like lose their mind. And I got news for you. When I was flying jets, that was, you know, $12,000 to $20,000 sitting there. And that's not a toy anymore.
Oh, no. When I see those things crashing to the ground and go into a ball of fire, I just, like, feel so bad for the guy. Like, oh, my gosh, his wife's going to kill him.
Yeah, well, and usually it's – and not that I'm saying that I'm one of those guys, but it's, you know, it's kind of like you have to go into it knowing that if something happens and that thing turns into a smoking hole, that, you know, you're not going to lose your house over it, or, you know – be smart. You know, these guys are mostly smart when you're at that level. Will Whiteside, who flew Voodoo up at Reno for a few years, he actually, before he started doing that, the company is Mebo, but it was an A-10 twin turbine. This thing, it was awesome. But at the, you know, after it's completely outfitted and with the turbines and everything that's in it, digital servos and the radio that takes it to run everything, about 25 grand sitting on the runway, you know? So, yeah. So they're not toys.
I had a 60 inch wingspan, version of the, Art Scholl, what do they call it? Chipmunk.
Mm-hmm.
And mine was only electric powered. It wasn't a gas powered.
Sure.
Anyways, I usually fly at an actual RC field, but a bunch of guys started flying in this great big open parking lot, and it's like an overflow parking lot where the Cardinals, mm-hmm. for the Arizona Cardinals, it's away from their stadium, but it's just like an overflow, and they take shuttles from there. So it's a great big open parking lot, but there's a school next to it. But that's, you know, a ways away. But in a plane, you know, doing, you know, 50, 60 miles an hour in the air, it doesn't take long to get to it. Anyways, flying around, and all of a sudden my transmitter loses communication with the receiver.
Yep.
No.
And the plane is straight and level, heading right for the school. And I'm running after it with my transmitter.
You know, hoping to relink.
Yeah, and I should have turned my transmitter off and then back on to maybe get it to relink. But anyways, it didn't. And then it outran me by a long while. Anyways, I start coming up to the school, and I thought at first, like, I put it into the parking lot and hit a car probably. So that was going to suck. But I didn't. Then I thought, well, crap, maybe it landed on the roof. And at that time, someone walks out of the school and goes, "Did you lose something?" And I'm like, "Yes." And he kind of gave me a look and did the finger motion, "Come here." I felt like I was back in school.
Yeah, you're going to the principal.
It's exactly who I went to go see. And anyways, he brought me in and took me outside in their courtyard, and there it was on the ground. And it barely missed, like, probably a dozen or 20 kids by like 10 feet or something. They were all out during lunch. And that was the last time I flew RC.
Yeah, that's
that'd do it.
So I'll go fly RC again, but never in that populated area. I'll go back out to the field at the designated RC field that's around nothing. So if it goes down, it goes down to a bunch of desert weeds. So. But that was a scary moment for me, you know. But then again, you know, I had the insurance, and I can't remember how much it is, Mark, but I think it was like a $100,000 policy or something like that.
Something like that. It depends.
I'm sure for Jet it might have been quite a bit more, because it's not about taking care of you. It's about taking care of the person or property that you damage.
Exactly.
That's all it's for. But I showed the guy my insurance card for that and my AMA card and all that stuff, and no harm, no foul, but that was the last day I flew there, and last day I flew RC for that matter.
I actually haven't flown probably in a couple of years. I mean, flown RC, obviously. I turned in the transmitter to go get a set of keys to fly the real thing.
There you go.
So, and I honestly haven't looked back. My buddy Keith still, with his Cirrus, he still flies RC at the field that I helped design, but yeah. He tries to get me to go, "Oh, you got to come for the Warbird event." Okay. And I never make it, because I know I'll get sucked back in. I really will. There's a couple of Warbirds, you do like a fifth scale Mustang or a 38 or something like that. I just know that I get sucked right back in.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It is. I really enjoyed it. But, you know, my wife's like, you know, pick your poison. Mm. You either fly full size and once in a while, or do the RC, but you can't have both.
Yeah.
So.
Well, guys, not to pun, but we've been droning on long enough.
Oh, boo.
Okay. We'll, okay,
I may have to break this up into two episodes.
Maybe. I have another one. This is really bad, and I heard it on Twitter, so I can't take full credit for it. But with the – I don't know if you guys are watching the World Cup at all or not.
Yeah, I watched the game today.
Yeah, but
if you could call it a game.
But somebody threw out there that Germany gave Brazil a good waxing.
Oh.
and then he hashtag rimshot.
Wow. Anyway, on that happy note.
On that happy note.
Shout outs, gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly have none. I'm just excited to get a list of things together and get ready to go to Osh.
I have one that all of you will second, I'm sure. To Dick Nipinski.
Dude, that's exactly awesome. Who I was going to do.
Dick Nipinski manages, among other things, social media contacts for EAA, and has helped us out in terms of our admission into the Oshkosh, and we are eternally grateful and really looking forward to providing some good coverage of the show. Not that our influence can be purchased for so cheap a price, but we're just really thankful for that because it's helped make the opportunity possible for us. Big thank you to Dick.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah, Dick. Once again, thanks again.
Now you guys got to work for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm in.
What are you talking about, John?
Hey, no. Also, with Osh coming up, shout out to Martin Larry for yet again getting together Camp Bacon and for all the work they do with that. And I know Larry is going to be showing up at Oshkosh, I believe, next Wednesday to set up Camp Bacon. So,
wow.
Early. How ridiculous is that?
We're close enough now that the campsite is going to, you know.
Got to get our spot.
Yeah. So huge shout out to them. I think that's all I got for right now.
Hey, if since this will be the last episode before we actually make it to Oshkosh, right? Well, people, you know, feel free to tweet us or whatever, or look for us at Oshkosh once you're there. Feel free to get a hold of us through Twitter or Facebook or whatever. We'll be glad to meet up and have a beverage with you or whatever.
I'm sure there's going to be a couple of the vendors there that are going to do send clues out on Twitter. Shaden did that, I think, 2 years ago.
What's that?
They put clues on Twitter, and if you were like the first one to, you know, you're paying attention to Twitter and you were the first one to get a clue, they gave away some sunglasses and some other stuff. So
okay.
I'm not saying that that's what we're going to do, but I'll have my phone and Twitter running. So
there you go.
Cool. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. It's late here on the East Coast. So let's go ahead and just let everybody know where they can reach us real quick. And you should be able to get any of us as well on any of our Twitter or at In the Pattern at Oshkosh Show if you want to get us. So, Chris, let's go ahead and start with you.
Sure. You can shoot me an email at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com. You can find me on the Twitter machine at CHOLABAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. You can check out my YouTube videos with that same name. You can also find us on Facebook and the Google Plus.
And Mark, how about you?
Sure, yeah. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter, Student Pilot Mark on Twitter. I'm on a few other places too, but they're coming to a complete loss right now. Mark at In the Pattern Podcast, of course. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
And Brad.
Hey, you can reach me at Brad at independentpodcast.com, at Brad King on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook and on Diaspora, bkane at diaspora.kane.com. And Kane, of course, is spelled just like it sounds, Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November.
And you can reach me at John at InThePatternPodcast.com, on Twitter, app.net, pretty much anywhere else at Pilot Conway, and I'm on Facebook at John L. Conway IV. For all of us, you can reach us all at podcast@InThePatternPodcast.com. We're on Twitter as InThePattern, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/InThePatternPodcast. Show notes for this episode and other episodes can be found at our website, InThePatternPodcast.com. That's also where you'll be able to find any of the quick casts and recordings that we make at Osh here at the end of the month. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode 45 of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank y'all for listening. And remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Media Network.
The Voices in Your Head .com.
And the other place you can find us is at Camp Bacon.
Hashtag.
Yum.